Selections from tapes made at the Cope Ranch near Taos, New Mexico, with Bartholomew, August 1st and 2nd, 1987.
Every year we have an outdoor workshop. So, what would be the reason for it? Why would some of you choose to come to this one instead of some other? And why would there be the urgency to have such a workshop? It is my choice to have you experience for yourself for 2 days one of the best friends that you will ever have. Some of you have come today in pain, others in confusion, others in boredom, others in restlessness, others in a stuck position, and some just to enjoy. But whatever the reason that you have come, it is the purpose of these 2 days to help you to remember. I will teach you nothing that you do not know. There is no teacher. You understand? This is not a teacher. It's a reminder. A reminder of something that you deeply know within your being, which is at any point of your life, be it just every morning, or when you are in a stressful position, or when you need something to move you into another frame of power, or if you simply need a friend, or if you simply need someone to hold you with compassion. And if you do not have such a person in your world, you must please remember the greatest power that you have access to on the physical plane is the natural earth consciousness. It is that which eases the physical body the best because it is the closest to it. Please understand, all of this is closer to it, to your physical body, and therefore has the capacity to ease the pain, to take away the sorrow. You do not have to go to the physical human plane in order to have all of those energies in your consciousness move to something more useful for you. Now, why is this so? Everything around you, and certainly as the 2 days work themselves, you will find building between these two structures in incredible velocity. And those of you who wish to deepen this evening, when the quiet is on the land, come and sit. Don't sit by your, come and sit here, if you will. Those of you who wish to rise early, come and sit and just begin to feel, or go to the top of any of these rocks and just allow yourselves. The natural plane of existence was created in the beginning time as your equal. There was nothing set aside as special about human consciousness. It was only when the human consciousness observed that it could do things different than the natural plane that it made the assumption that if it was different, it had to be somehow better. That somehow, because you can walk around on 2 feet and all these things cannot move, that somehow you had an advantage. Beautiful friends, I think by the end of these 2 days, you have a very different feeling of the friendship and the compassion and the nurturing that these walls of power will be able to give you. You are not alone. And that does not mean that you have to have humans running around your life to make you feel not alone. It means simply that. You are not alone. And all of the power of the wind as it comes, of the song that will play between these two rock faces, you see, it's already playing. Just as you communicate with each other, so do these rock faces communicate with each other all of the time. This is why I beg you, if you plant a tree, plant another one like it. Please allow it to have something near that it can communicate with, that it's its own understanding, so that they can play in their own wondrous way the song of communication. Because all things communicate all the time. And these rocks sing to each other of a depth. When you stop and deeply move into your being in these 2 days, you'll understand that the oldest thing communicative on this planet is the rocks. It is the rocks. All other things, including yourselves, beautiful ones, have come after it. It is the rocks. It is the rocks that hold the power. If the rocks were to one day decide that they no longer wanted to hold the power of the light, everything would be in total chaos. They hold the power and have done so since the beginning of this wonderful experiment of Earth consciousness. So, if you are in confusion, if you are in sorrow, or if you just want to feel closer to that which you call the God self, please do not make the separation that somehow these beautiful creations are not capable of filling you with the same kind of deep knowing. And when you get in the presence, you know, over and over again, when you read the literature of all of human consciousness, the ones who come to some kind of pinnacle of understanding, usually, now let's not make rules, usually do so in the presence of the vast desert, the great mountains, the great rocks, the great trees. In some way, they find themselves out of their usual frame of human consciousness and remove themselves, and all of a sudden, they find themselves expanding. They find themselves feeling more at ease, more at peace. Now, right here, they make a misunderstanding. Oftentimes, they say, oh, it is because human consciousness is so unpredictable, is so chaotic, and therefore, when I'm away from human consciousness, I'm then able to rest more clearly in my being. My friends, don't accept that, because in so doing, you will be saying something not very uplifting about yourselves. And I ask you to only think those things that are uplifting about yourselves, because it's through such thoughts that you will honor yourselves enough to allow yourselves to experience God consciousness. What is in truth the fact is that when a human leaves the communicative world of human, which is through speech and body action, they allow themselves to move into a totally different realm of wonder. They sit and they become that deeper. You see, the rock is able through it, you will understand what I mean about the power of the sound of these rocks, and you will be very aware that that sound is so deeply alive that it moves through the cacophonous speech of your mind and brings with it a power of calming that is not capable to the human consciousness who lives in a dualistic world. There's no dualism in these rocks. There will be no sense of, oh, am I doing it right? Do you think that they will be in any way perplexed? Am I presenting my best face? Am I as beautiful this morning as I could be without a nice hot shower? You see, you will begin to know that you are not separate from that consciousness. You created, all of you, all of the different parts of the One, created this amazing planet, and you did it in harmony with all knowing of the equality of things. This rock does not speculate as to which is the higher form of evolution. This rock does not speculate on anything other than to what extent am I allowing the motion of the vastness to move through me and permeate my being, which it has a being, as you are already beginning to feel, some of you, permeate my being and move out into the vastness and do what it needs to do. Its only concern is, am I in an open, porous state, receiving that which is abundantly around me, and am I then moving it out into the spatial difference to allow all of the other creations to pick it up in its own way? You see, you're all feeling the same thing. But these trees, these bushes, these wonderful flowers, their receiving of that power from these vast beacons is very different from how you will feel it. They will not feel it in the same way, but feel it they do. And you just are going to begin to see that there is only a oneness, an amazing, empowered oneness that moves through all of it. There is as much God power available to you in these rocks as there is in the deepest form of meditation that you will ever find. The power, the empowering capability resounds and is, in a sense, overrides the chatter of the mind. It's simply an override because they are so vast. So as our first meditation, let us begin to understand, if you will just allow yourself to put aside any preconception of how God touches you, if you will just realize that that one power out of which you all arose is still moving with absolute marvel and majesty through all of the createdness, and right here, most beautifully, you'll begin to relax. You will begin to let go. You will begin to open so that the next step can be taken. There's nothing that these rocks do not accept. They have no judgment. They will not say to you, no, 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 I don't think so. I just don't think so. I don't quite approve. Now, by the same sweep of truth, do not allow yourselves to fall into the idea that you are less than these rocks. You are the rocks. You are. You are. Not one. Now listen. To those of you that can hear me, hear me. Those of you that can't, forget it. The highest truth I will ever say is simply said. You have to decide, is there one or is there the many? Is there one or are there the 10,000 things? If there's only one, if there's only one, which every truth has said to you, then something has to shift in your perception. Because you perceive yourselves as different from each other, as different from these sentinels of power. So something has to shift, and the rock isn't going to shift, because the rock knows. The rock would, and you will understand, there is absolutely not one particle of rejection in these rocks. So please hear me, those of you who can. It's either the one or the many. But if you have two, then you have the many. Do you understand? Please, in your whole heart, try to hear me. There's only one. With the arising of just one other, then you have the 10,000 things. I know I'm coming in at a high octave, but so many of you can hear me. Please hear me. Something has to shift in your consciousness in these 2 days so that you know these magnificent sentinels are you and you are them. Something here has to shift. Now I want you to stretch yourself into the realm of an area that humans have difficulty moving in, but please hear me. It is a human belief that only humans can communicate with each other because they have the power of speech. And therefore, they think things such as rocks are not able to speak. But please hear the reality of what happens. The energy from the vastness is accumulated on this planet by the high mountains. These high mountains are the first translators of that energy. Not the last, the first. Please stretch yourself to understand that it is the mountain, the high peaks, that have the clearest form of truth. Which is why you find the hermits and the yogis moving to those pinnacles. Now, that power can move through your physical body and leave trace patterns of words. Rocks don't speak in your words. But they have, since you are all made up of the same substance, they have the ability to take the power and translate it through your physical cellular structure, your mind-body-emotional combination, and spark urges that feel like words. So now, please, for the last part of this meditation, would you please allow yourself to open to the possibility that this power can translate in you in some kind of word, either one or a series, or for some of you who don't hear very well, pictures. Some of you who don't hear or see very well, feelings. Please see if you can allow that wondrous process to begin. The human consciousness has been trained to listen to only its own kind. But you don't hear that Jesus went into the city and sat in the bar and then got his 40-day revelation. You don't hear that the Buddha went into the large city and conversed with the wise ones. He went under a tree and sat there. And Moses certainly had to go up a mountain to get his revelation. Now, what does this mean? Do you all have to leave your cities, your towns, and your jobs and move to the mountains? Of course not. But it does mean something very, very practical. I'm going to make this statement. Those of you who can hear it, please hear it. Some of you, when you are in an extremity, need to learn one basic truth about human consciousness. The greatest grief is quickest overcome when you remove yourself from your enclosed environment, when you go to a vast, large, powerful place where you can be silent, no matter what your fear, and ride the currents of pain, ride the currents of loss and sorrow and bereavement and confusion, and ride them day and night as they move through your system and allow them to move through your system. And I promise you, if you stay there for, let us say, no less than 4 days, on into the 5, 6, and 7, when you leave there, your consciousness will not feel the same. There will be a movement that has gone through you and takes those feelings and, as on a great wave, ride through them and out. Do you want to get over something that's grieving you or bothering you or pinching you? Don't talk about it. You can talk yourself to oblivion and you get hoarse and you bore every friend you've got. Ride the wave. Everything is in motion. Your pain, your suffering, your joy, your wonder, everything is in motion. And if you can allow yourself to dare to cut yourself off from human communication, which you have been conditioned to say gives you the nurturing and the nourishment, if you're paying close attention, that does not happen a lot. What will happen to you is you will make the statement, I am ready to ride the wave of these feelings and let them go out into the vastness, and I am willing to begin to take into me something totally new. And there is a fear, because when you're by yourself, there's just you. And the one thing that's frightening for many humans is, if nobody else is there, is anybody there? Do you know, think about it. When you're all by yourself and you start getting a little bit restless and you turn on the TV or turn on the music or pick up a book, what is the fear? What is the fear? Oh my goodness, if nobody else is here, maybe nobody's here. Maybe nothing's happening. You are used to responding from outside. And what I'm asking you to do is call on the greatest healer of all, which is that wondrous choice of isolation, of knowing, and you will get clarity. You want to know what to do? Don't take a vote on the block and get 16 answers. Take yourself somewhere. If you can't go anywhere, then just shut the doors, turn off the telephone, throw the television out the door. No, just permanently. Make everyone aware that you're not there and ride it. The wonderful delight of being a human and having problems is to come to the knowing that you have the ability to ride out anything, from the greatest loss, such as the death of a child, to whatever else you can extrapolate in your mind. Delight is to know that in human consciousness you have the ability to ride the wave, to be clear of it and to move on, to absorb what seem to be these incredible shocks of consciousness, and to move off and through them into clarity. And then you are no longer afraid of being a human. You know, we've talked before, and we've said that fear is the feeling that you will not be able to deal with whatever happens. That is the thing. It's not the thing itself. It's the feeling of, my God, if it comes, how will I deal with it? Then comes fear, paralysis. I can't do it. I can't do it. But you look around, and no matter what fear you have conjured up in your mind, some human being that you know has ridden it out and been victorious. Don't separate yourself from the great ones and say, oh, they were just better than I. If one has done it, all can do it. The equipment is absolutely the same. The fear of being alone with only one's mind, with only one's own consciousness. What am I going to do with myself for 7 days? Well, the first few days, it's hard. So take a drum, take your pencil, your paper, take walks. And then soon, one day, you find that hours have gone by and you've just been in a state of being. And then you begin to know that there is a sense of regret of having to leave and to move back into the world. You owe it to yourselves, my friends, before you die, to have tried this. And those of you who have tried it and found it useful, please remember, should the occasion ever arise again, to try it. Clarity comes from within. And it comes best in a state when the harmonies are there. And that comes easiest when life is at its simplest, which is just you and your consciousness and God. The point of all this is very simple, my friends. Your minds trap you into believing that you know the answers. And yet, even though your mind tells you the answer, your body feels sad, abandoned, lonely, confused, constricted, unhappy, unnourished. So, what's happened? What's happened is that the mind long ago became disconnected with the body. Most of you, my friends, spend a lot of time thinking. Now, you might spend time thinking about your body, but that's not the same thing. That's still thinking. And the whole point of this 2 days is to let you remember that the body is the first teacher for consciousness. The first teacher. It is that part of you that records the material and stores it. The mind has gone on. Have you noticed? It just hops from one top to another and on and on and on. And the body records. So if you really wish to clear yourself from any kind of dilemma, from an addiction to cigarettes or whatever it might be, to an addiction to sleeping too much or to not being able to sleep well, whatever it is, if there's any kind of a situation that records itself in the body, please remember, go to where the problem is and ask the place of the problem for the solution. Do not go to your brain to solve the problems of your body, because it would have done it a long time ago. The problem is your brain says, yes, I know the problem. The problem is that you're eating too much meat. And the mind says, all right, that's the problem. And then stops eating meat. And the body keeps hurting. But the mind has already decided. So the problem doesn't get solved. So then the mind says, no, 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 we were wrong. What really is the problem is that you don't drink enough water. So you begin to drink more water. And the body still feels ill. When illness is present, dis-ease is there, and the body has something to tell you. The natural wonder of the physical body is it has the ability to talk to you. It has the ability, through images or through feelings, which is what we discussed earlier, either images or feelings, it has the way to show you what the dilemma is. You know, if you've lost someone you love, you say, oh, I'm sad because I lost someone I love. But that may not be what your body says. Your body might say, I am furious. I am so furious that I am afraid of how furious I am. So I have to pretend that I'm not furious at all. So I will just stay in a low-grade depression instead of allowing myself to hear, I am furious. If you find yourself reacting totally out of proportion to anything, someone comes in the morning, your wife or husband comes in and say, good morning, dear, and you say, what's good about it? Something's going on. Stop everything as best and as soon as you can and realize that the mind and the body are out of harmony. That something is going on. That the body is responding to something and the mind is giving you a false statement. You do not have to be PhDs in psychology to understand the basic premise. The body has the ability to talk to you. Many of you will not believe this and will never do it again. But I would stress those of you who do have a feeling about it to start seeing as these 2 days move on, if you cannot learn deeply to listen to what the body is trying to say to you. The mind fools you. The body can speak to you directly. The moment you do this with consciousness, you have placed in your psychic field another energy field. And if you nourish it and deepen it, it will take hold just as a plant in the ground, if you take care of it, takes hold. If you don't, you know what happens. You plant it, say, oh, I love you, and you leave it, and it dies. So it's up to you. But this is the planting time. Which is that you are the changers. You have created it in the first place, and you can change it at your own sweet volition. If you are miserable, you have nobody to blame but yourself. And that is the very last thing that the separated ego ever wants to hear. You are miserable because of yourself. And you say to me, but that's just not true. These things happen to me. Terrible things happen to me. How can I be in a state of happiness in the midst of these feelings, these things that have happened to me? You all know that to a large extent, for all of the years that you've lived on this earth plane, you have brought certain things into your life by your thoughts. They've been going on and on and on. One basic meaning of the New Age is there is coming a realization deeply within the consciousness of many people. It does not have to be this way. It does not have to be this way. And the amount of time that you spend watching the things that you think, watching the things that you say, will tell you why your life is as it is. The basic difficulty is you have to realize that as a child, you got what you wanted by going to someone else and saying, please. And either you got it or you didn't. And you set up all kinds of habit patterns around that one issue. You want something, you go somewhere and you get it. What we're asking you for, with all of the power of all of the new things that are being said, there's only one thing that's important. It's always been there in your language anyway, which is, as you think, so you become. If you just dwell deeply, please, on what that really means, and you say to me, I can't change my thoughts. They're too overwhelming. They're too overwhelming. This morning we did a short exercise on how to diffuse those overwhelming thoughts. Some of you didn't bother to do it. Those of you that did, I ask you to think about it again. You can diffuse the power of those seemingly overwhelming thought patterns so that you clear a space around you. And all you need is a little space. You know, if the garden is filled with stuff, pull something out so you have a chance to put something new in it. But the idea of the seed, as we did in the mandalas, is essential to understand. Moment by moment, you are planting constantly, and then whatever you've planted, you are going around nourishing. And listen to yourself. Do you have the mumbles? Do you know about the mumble grumbles? There's this low-grade grumble that goes through lots of people's lives, and they wonder why their life is, it's not terrible, but it's not wonderful. It's just a low-grade grumble. You know, an occasional up, an occasional down, but mostly there's this grumble that goes on. Well, my job isn't quite good enough. Well, I wish I had a little better house. Grumble, grumble, grumble. And it's not even conscious. But what happens in your life is you have a low-grade, grumbly kind of a life that doesn't make you wake up in the morning and say, ha, today. You go, oh, today. Today, is it Monday? And on Friday, oh, it's Friday. You see, and what determines this? Only the guardian of the threshold, which is you, which is your conscious choices. We're going to mature conscious choice. Do I want it or not? You say, it's too simple. I said, well, then what else are you going to do? You are waiting for some magic person to push a button that's going to make your life not grumble. Sometimes it's a love affair. Sometimes it's God. You know, but either way, you're waiting. And you don't have to wait. From this moment on, the waiting is over. You can place in your psyche, through your conscious choice, those thoughts and feelings and visions. What is a visionary? A visionary is someone who sits around and has visions that make them feel magnificent. That's a visionary. And then they tell them to other people. Other people go, that's wonderful. Your vision makes me feel wonderful. And then they make the next mistake. They say, oh, you are the visionary, and I am the receiver of hearing of your visions. No. You are visionaries unto yourselves. And as soon as you get on to the delight of what being a visionary means, then you're going to begin to really live in an expanded state. The difficulty is simple. You do not believe you create your own reality. You don't believe it. Part of you wants to believe it. Another part of you tries to believe it. And another part of you pulls you down. But the truth of it is, you create your reality by the thoughts and feelings and emotions that move through you, and you have the power to change them. The warrior is the one that says, I know something can shift. But there's only one thing you need, which is to sit down and take your vision seriously. You see, you don't, because you're afraid. What if I have this vision of this wonderful thing that I want, and then God's not going to give it to me? Listen to your mind, but that's what you think. Or life won't give it to me. Or somehow I'm not going to get it. Or I'm not worthy of getting it. Or I'm not pure enough. Or whatever it might be. You have a sabotage committee at work in your consciousness. And the minute that you become a visionary, which you do every time you deeply yearn for something wonderful and vast and powerful, then the sabotage committee comes along and says, no, 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 that's nice, dear, but you can't have it. Why don't you sit around and wait for somebody to give it to you? You've been sitting for centuries. Everything that you're looking for is in the sphere already of you. And you've just been living in the same house. You know, in my father's house, there are many mansions. The problem is you've been living in the basement for a long time. And you keep forgetting that in your father's house, which is in your psyche, there are many, many mansions, all of which are available if you just get up, walk out the door, and start looking around. And that's what these 2 days is about. It's time to look around. And when a visionary, which is you, sits down and claims parts of their own being, which is the visionary part of themselves, they begin to live a vaster space. Another way of saying it. The house of the visionary within your psyche is very large. It has to be. You never think of a tiny little small vision. Would you call that a vision or just a thought? You know, you don't say, oh, I had a tiny, tiny, small, insignificant vision. You never speak like this. The word itself means vast and open and somehow majestic and somehow breaking through the barriers of your sight. A visionary means you see something that's not there. Because you all see what's here. So a visionary is someone who can see past what is here. And so in that consciousness of visionary in you, if you will begin to chance becoming a visionary just a small time every day, you will begin to move more and more and live more and more in the house of the visionary. And in that house of the visionary are the things that expand your soul. You will probably not get a better car unless that's really what your vision has in store for you, and I doubt that anyone is going to come here for 2 days just to get a bigger house. I don't believe it. So the visionary within, the house of vision, is filled with the things that the soul has been yearning for. Now, some of those things you have already gotten. You have been visionaries at different times of your lives, in all the lives, and you have gotten many things that were in the house of vision. And you've already manifested them, but because the veil falls between lifetimes, you've forgotten. And you don't have to go back. Don't worry about it. It's all there. So this afternoon, after your good lunch and after your good rest, be ready to move into the house of the visionary. And as you sit or lie, whatever today, if you'd spend some time not talking, just not a lot, you know, whatever, to just dwell, please, on what it would mean to you if you were to awaken and begin to experience that you were a visionary. What would that feel like? What does the state of visionary feel like in you? And you say, why should I be a visionary? And I say, because in the house of vision lies all those things that the seeker is looking for, and it makes you a finder instead of a seeker. It begins with vision, with creative vision, imagination, bringing it closer and closer to you. And so this afternoon, for some of you, the first step into the house of vision in this lifetime. You say to me, I can't do it. I say, I don't believe you. You've been in and out of the house of vision endlessly, countlessly. You wake up from a dream and you're empowered. And you say, what a dream. Where have you been? To the house of vision. Where all the possibilities, where all the probabilities, where all the delights are there. You say, oh, but that's just my dream state. And I say to you, is it possible that dream state is vaster and clearer and closer to the reality than your waking state? Is it possible? You know, some of you aren't going to take this seriously. And that's all right. But let me tell you how beauty and harmony easiest begin to manifest in the material plane. Through the beginning power of visualizing the possibilities. You have shortchanged yourselves, my friends. You live in a very small world. And believe that that's all you could have. And it is not so. And if you'll just trust me, just for 2 hours this afternoon, we'll ramble through the house of vision. Bring the willingness to participate in opening the door to the vision of who you are. You do not have to take drugs to move into the house of vision. You see, this is one of the difficulties. When you do, certain drugs do tend to open the door a small way, and you peek in. You don't enter, but you peek. You say, ooh, that looks wonderful. Bang, there goes the door shut. Oh, I know the answer. I'll do this again. So whatever the drug is, you take it again, and there it goes. Oh, I see. Yes, you're right. That's right. Bang. So either you finally decide that you are ready to move into the house of vision by standing up and walking through the door boldly, or you're not ready. I don't, this particular moment, unless a large part of your being was ready. But I'd like...
A lady asks why tears come in moments of joy.
When the being begins to say, my God, there is a God. There is. There is. And then it goes away. And then it returns. And then it slips away. When you awaken in the moment, in the night, and somehow you realize that you have been somewhere and experienced something far vaster than your finite mind could possibly imagine, then you begin to be filled with gratitude. And tears are gratitude. The great, tremendous upwelling of saying, thank God that you exist. You know, all of mankind struggles to believe, please let there be a God. And then, when they begin to approach it, then they become afraid. Well, what if there is a God and he doesn't love me? What if there is a God and he doesn't like me? What if there's a God and he condemns me to everlasting hell? Then fear comes in, and then the consciousness says, oh, I don't know if I want there to be a God. And then finally, one day, you are tired of cracking your head against this wall, and the being decides, at all costs, I will find out if there is one or not. And if there isn't, then it will be finished. And if there is, and this God does not love me, I will stand there and do what I can. But at all costs, I must know. When that moment in consciousness comes, then ever repeating on it, just as waves come to the shore, ever and ever yet again, the residue of remembrance comes time after time, and a note in the consciousness begins to get deeper and deeper, which then draws more and more experiences of it. It is gratitude. The one emotion that is so hard to feel is gratitude. To be utterly, completely grateful to someone else makes you utterly and completely vulnerable. But at the same time, it is the only way home. Cleanliness is not next to godliness. Gratitude is. Gratitude is. And I read you as saying, I'm grateful. And the more that you do it, the more openness there will be, and the more you can be filled, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. The basic question arises, having said that you receive as you give, and you give as you receive, then someone goes under some kind of an occasion of pain, scans their life, and says, I don't see how this can be. I don't see how I have received what I have given. Is this the question?
That's correct.
I wish I could tell you that this was a breaking down of the law, my friend, but the event that you are describing, as painful as it is, holds the essential seed of one of the last pieces of your learning. Endless times throughout all of your lives, and this applies to all of you, be treated badly. That is not my lesson and never will be. It is again and again to say, somehow you have lost the knowing of your own beauty, your own strength, that you yourself, as you stand, as you move in your life, can generate on your own behalf every impossible feeling of wonder that you need. And any of you listen to this, please. When you go too much to the other side and give too much power to the beloved, something always happens. Because it weakens. Now, sometimes when you give power to the beloved says, no, I want to be with you, but let's share this power deeply. And then there's a difference. Then there's a knowing. Do you understand? But with all due respect, I don't see that that was the common operative of this particular relationship. No judgment. I just don't see that. So giving to her and she giving to you the same thing, which is the ability to see who you are, in the space that is created with the loss of a love, opportunity is possible. My friend, I ask you again, find that which you seek within your own being. Find that which you seek within yourself, and you will see it everywhere else after that. You must be the master unto yourself, my friend. You must. As much love as you gave out, the thing that was missing was love of yourself. I don't believe in karma. I believe in explosions, one after another. Your lives are one explosion after another, not one event after another. And anyone who could say, oh, you have gotten this event because of something that happened and now you're getting your payment, they are very linear and they don't know what they're talking about. Whenever the power moves too much into another, something happens. And it happens with death of children. It doesn't just happen in love affairs. It happens in divorces. It happens in death of children. It happens in loss of material gain. Whenever anything is unbalanced in your life, if your deepest goal is to really know, and for a long time it was, your deepest goal was definitely to know who you are, then the call goes out and the balancing takes place by your own asking. The problem is the conscious mind has forgotten that you've asked. I'm trying to get as deeply within this as I can. When that point of power is ever missing in your relationship, you yourself will strive in some way to manipulate the world so that you can begin the process of balancing once again. Very lovely lady asks about her son. It is a son, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Who at this moment is manifesting obnoxiousness and thus creating an area around him of emptiness without friends and so on. And what is then the truth? I can't say too much because he's not asking the question. You see, if he were here, then he and I, we could do what we have to do. But he's not here. And so the law is I can't go mussing around in his consciousness. That's not fair. All right? That's black magic. Even for the good, it's black magic. All right. Now, but what then can one do? If you just, there's just a very basic, few very basic beliefs out of which clarity arise in these instances. First and foremost, ask him. On a continuing basis, ask the person who is having the behavior situation, what's happening? Why is he doing it? What's it all about? What's he feeling? How does he feel about this? What is the purpose of it? You see, within this psyche, we don't know. He knows. He has what he needs, if I can say this about him, what he needs is this wonderful opportunity to begin, you know, when one starts yelling, it probably means, hey, not enough people are really listening to me. I mean, you might be listening to me, but are you really listening to me? When people start screaming, that usually means the frustration level is up, and they want to really be heard. So what I would suggest, which you would do very easily and very gently and very well, is to just begin to have listening time with him. And I don't mean while you're doing 18 things. I mean, you know, sitting down and saying, what? Just talk to me. And then the temptation, of course, for the parent is to talk back. If one can just say nothing and just be the listener, I will tell you something. This young man wants to say some things, and he needs some space to say them. And if you can just be a calm, gentle, detached person, the minute you go into it, drop your role of mother, say, all right, mother, you go out the door. Sister is going to sit here, or good friend, whatever role you can fill. And just sit there and allow. And no comment on, no statement, oh, yes, but, just allowing and allowing. He needs to say some things. There's some things he would like a lot of people to know. The family is always first because they're the most impinging. But then there's a lot of other things that he simply wants to say. He has some things he wants to clear up. And his peers aren't going to be able to do it because it's not that kind of an information. He wants to talk. So if you could please just begin to have a safe harbor for him to talk, just say, all right, you know, you can't do it for day after day after day, but you can say, for 20 minutes a day, you can say anything you want, and I will listen, and I will not say yes, but, and I will not bring it up next week and say, but you said, but I will listen, because I love you, and I want you to be heard. Any of you who have children who act this way, who just sporadically go here and go there and go there and go there, they have something they want to say. And if you just say, they don't go to their parents because, you know, parents have a way of saying, well, do you remember last time in our private time you said, boo, and then they get very, very despondent. Or the parent goes into some kind of analytical process. What this young man is looking for is a hearing board. And if it can't be you, then I suggest you hire someone. That's what therapists are all about. I love them. They're the most, they're wonderful. They're just wonderful. You say, here, $50, you be quiet and let me talk. And they say, all right. And you talk and they say, thank you. You say, thank you. You get up and you go. Now this lovely young man, and he is a lovely man. I don't care what anybody says. This is a lovely young man. Doesn't have $50 in his back pocket. And if he did, he would go and he'd say, you be quiet. Not you. And listen. And that's, so I'm being very serious, trying to be lighthearted because you take your role very seriously and I honor that, but nevertheless you haven't breathed for 2 minutes here. So what I ask you to do is to realize he needs a detached sounding board of someone who could really hear. Now, the problem with saying, let's take you to a therapist, is he's going to start thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me, I'm all messed up, and oh my, oh my, oh my. Now, if there is someone in your life, a friend of yours, a friend of his, older, someone who he cares about, who would be happy to play this role and who would not report back to you, which he would find out in an instant, then that would be optimal. If you cannot find someone like that and you're the only one, it's difficult because the anxiety of motherhood runs in the blood. So he just has things to say. Now, the interesting thing about this young man is he doesn't know what he has to say yet. It's he's a multi-leveled fellow. I've known this fellow for a long time. Yes, he's multi-leveled, you see. And so a lot of the things that are bothering, he doesn't even know are bothering yet. And he really needs to talk. And not in some judgmental, terrifying way. But he just really needs it. And I honestly tell you that I feel if you can give him a safe harbor with someone who will honor his integrity, and just listen and listen and listen and listen, you're going to begin to unlock, it's the cork, it's stuck in the bottle. And you don't have to say, how did the cork get stuck in the bottle? You know, that old Indian story that you know about, if you're shot with an arrow, poisoned arrow, you don't wait to find out who shot it at you before you have somebody pull it out. You know, just say, take this thing out. And this is what I would advise, help him. Yes, and he's got a lot of things there. He has things to say, and there's nobody that he feels safe enough because he doesn't know what he's going to say. Now listen, children are very, very dedicated to not hurting their parents on many, many levels. Is that not true? They are dedicated on not hurting their parents. So if you have some complaint against you or your lovely husband or the family in general or God or I don't know who, he doesn't want to hurt you. So find him a safe harbor. Some good, safe friend. And don't worry. Don't worry. He'll pop the cork one way or another. But he just has so many things to say. He has so many pictures to draw, so many stories to tell. But he got to pop the cork first. This is a very fine young man. Never lose sight of that. Ever, ever, ever. The question is, why, after a long time of feeling safe, now there's been for a year a period of feeling more and more afraid and not knowing why. Can you hear me? Fear is a magnificent friend, because whenever it's time to move to another level, when it's time to clear some past out of your way, fear comes up and says, well, hello, are we ready? And you say, I'm not ready. I don't know about you, but I'm not ready. So you turn away. And then you turn around and here comes fear again. Fear says, you ready now? And you say, oh, well, let's wait a little while. You go back around. But eventually, when this dance goes on enough, the exasperation arises and you say, all right, fear. Let's do something about it. Now, what do I mean practically? In a practical sense, I mean that this energy field, if you will, when you are in the midst of feeling it, deepest feeling it, that is the time that it has the best chance of talking to you. And I mean literally talking to you, sitting down and with your paper and pencil saying, all right, fear is an energy field that vibrates in and out of you, touching off places within you where there is blockage. And that's how you feel fear. It's something's hitting. All right? Now, when you just begin to write it, it's as if you are asking this energy field called fear to move through you and get itself taken care of. And you write, and you write, and you write, and you write. The more that you do this with seriousness, but without depression, realizing that fear is carrying its own message within it of freedom, that it comes as a good brother, absolutely, then you will begin to know that whenever it's around, right on the other side of it is the open door. And every time that you take it seriously enough to sit down and talk to it, let it flow through you, let the images come up. You know, they're all in there. They'll start to bubble up in you, one after the other. Your pencil won't be able, or pen won't be able to go fast enough. And you'll, oh, that's right, I've got that. All right, then I've got that. And it's one after the other after the other. That exercise that we did this morning, if you were able to do it at all, is very helpful with fear. Because fear, the difficulty with fear is it doesn't have any name. It's just fear. And that's like love. I mean, that's like, well, I love this breakfast, and I love my son. I mean, you know, where is the corollary here? So fear is the same way. Oh, I am so afraid that I'll miss the bus, and I am so afraid that my child will die. It's the same word. So when you take it and sit it down in a chair, so to speak, and you, as we did this morning, try to get the feeling of it, the color, the texture of it, a name of it. Keep the name going back and forth until the name really meshes, until the feeling is really clear. Fear is not a good thing because it's too general. But when you begin to get very specific, when you ask that feeling to give it, to give you a feeling, a sense of what it's all about, what is this all about? You see, everything has a wholeness to it. And so does this situation, whatever the situation. Now, if you don't sit down and take it and begin to understand it, it just keeps running and running. And then it runs into all areas of your life. And then one just feels, my life is filled with fear. But that's not really true. So do you see? To take it seriously enough, to get very specific, when it is upon you, say, all right, there's this feeling. What is it about this feeling? And get deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Do what we did today. Try to find a word that matches with it. And then you'll begin to clarify. If it's in your mind, you're lost. But if you allow the feeling, which is a body experience, to begin to teach you, you'll get released and released. Even if the situation doesn't change, you will know what it is. You know, it's when you're ill and the whole body is in terrible pain, it's very helpful to know, look, it's just an abscess tooth, you know, and we'll take care of it, instead of thinking the entire body somehow is racked. Do you understand? it's getting it isolated. And then in the moment of the isolation, the rest of you, your being, knows how to take care of it. Every time you start to come up against great change, when a real leap is imminent, fear begins to come. All right? Just now recognize what it is. Oh, say, oh, good. Oh, good. Oh, good. We're on our way. Something's about to happen. This is delightful. I'm terrified. Even such a statement as that, my friend, takes it away all of its tremendous control. You can deal with anything when you isolate it and understand it. It's the things that go bump in the night that are frightening, because you can't see them. But you take your flashlight out, and you see what it is, and you will know what to do about it. All right? The question. A lovely lady whose father died when she was 15, and she feels that it was so painful that he just, in her consciousness, just disappeared. And now she wants to heal it and wants to bring him to her so that she can do the healing, and he won't come. The father that you carry in your mind does not exist. But there is an energy field that is this entity that was your father. And since there's nowhere to go and nothing to do, that energy field exists somewhere. And since there's only one, you have the opportunity and the ability to sense out that energy field quite opposite from your conscious mind, your memories, the stories you heard, the pain you went through afterwards, all of which is not in him at all. It's in you as a result of what happened. So, this has to be done in stages. So let me give you stage one. When you have completed stage one, please write to Mary Margaret and I'll give you stage two. Stage one is essential. For at least 6 weeks, just sit and... Do you have a picture of him close to the time that he died? All right. Just with the soft gaze, just gaze at it. Don't think. You know, don't bring up memory. Don't bring up all of that. Just look at the picture, or look at a picture in your mind of some way that you remember him prior to that, and just begin to feel. You'll begin to feel an energy field that at the start might even seem a stranger to you, because your mind has created something else, all right? So, but that energy field exists. And if you just sit there and allow it to just have a feeling of it, have a feeling of this energy field, just like that, not talking to it, not pulling it forward or pushing it away, just kind of settling in, then you're going to begin to get information. Now, someone can say, look, this person's dead and you shouldn't be making humbug. What we are doing, my friend, is not dealing with your father wherever he is, because in those 15 years, he's gone to go and do and become something that he needs to be. What you have to do, lovely one, is to deal with this energy field as it was manifested when it was here 15 years ago, and it's right here. You see, nothing goes anywhere. So without bothering him on his trajectory toward his journey, you have as your birthright the ability to simply sit down and to re-remember, just to re-remember that energy field, just to remember it. And all you do is to feel it. You don't think it. You just feel it. And since it is in your psyche, because it's your memory of him and your totally personal interaction, it is your blending of energies. You understand, it's got nothing to do with stopping him on his journey. That's very important to remember. What you're trying to do is reconcile that energy field with all of the things that happened subsequently. But I will tell you something, my friend. If you can get to the place where you just gently move into your psyche and feel him. Any of you who have lost someone and you're confused and you want to feel their love and you're confused by all things and what happened in mess, pain and suffering and loss and so on, there remains deeply embedded in your psyche the experience of that entity as they were in your life, as they really were. Not as all this memory, not as habits, not as storytelling. And you don't have to worry because everyone, every single entity in the world wants to be loved and wants desperately to love. So it's not like going into a big bag and here comes a black cat or a devil, you know. It's going to be a wonderful, the essence of your father, the wonderful, deep, caring, committed, struggling essence of your father is right there. Personally, as it was in your reality, as you together with a blend of two created it, it'll begin to set you free. That's chapter one. So when you're finished, write to Mary Margaret. We'll do chapter two. But I need to know what's happened on chapter one. Is the question, is your intuition about you right or is someone else's? Look. Everyone plays things out through their own window. And seeing through other, and other people seeing that, since it doesn't look like their window, they say something's askew. The only thing that I will tell you, my friend, is as you go through this process, as you find yourself over and over again finding the pearl, doing the best, trying to bring maximum out of that part of it, as you do it, if you go within and the feeling, did you hear this? The feeling is optimistic, buoyant, light, then you're on the right track. If, on the other hand, if you do it and you feel that it's rather pulling in a down sweep, that the feelings are more down and that for, you're trying to get around a rock or something like this, then we have to stop and say, let's look at this again. My experience with human beings is everyone eludes something. No one really likes to hear the negative. No one really embraces having people go around and saying, the problem with you, honey, is... The problem with that is every one of you are struggling to see yourself in your fullness of your wonder and your beauty. Some people do it best by going through the negative. Other people do it best by holding strong to the positive. There are in this world polarities, the positive and the negative. Some people are closer to one pole than they are to the other. The wonderful freedom for you around this whole issue is, can you be positive about it? You see, applying the very thing that has saved you, that has brought the clarity, apply it now in that same way that you've applied it in the past. I will tell you one secret, and I'm saying it to everyone under this tent. The way out of any relationship dilemma that you have, no matter what the situation, is to love them. No matter what. Love, no matter what happens to the other person, you will be free. No matter what they do, you will be free. Because the thing that frees the energy is the love. And instead of trying to go through your mind and decide, if you can just say, all right, we have two points of view. My way out is, I'm going to begin in this moment just to feel love for this person, the situation, whatever it is, and that's it. The mind is infinitely separating. But do you understand deeply? You have this ability. You have it. The dilemma of positive and negative is going to go on as long as this earth is banging around this wonderful universe in the way that it wants to. That's what it likes to do. This is a polarity planet, and it loves it. That's how it feels itself in its polarities. But you have the ability, seeing the two polarities, to also at the same time get in touch with that wonderful releasing that says, whatever your opinion is, it's all right, honey, I love you. Whatever you say, I love you, it's all right. And if what you say is true, I feel sure I'll come to it someday on my own. It may not be true, it may be true. Do you understand? That same wonderful positive. You know, we have to say, why does this come to you? Again and again, all of you, in the different ways in your life, when you have a way of approaching the world and are beginning to feel confident in it, rest assured, they will send somebody around to show you the other side. Are you really sure that's what you had in mind? Are you really positive that you've decided to do such and so? You see, you're almost axiomatic. If you want it, something will come around and say, are you really sure about this? You know, everything's ready. You're going to begin a new job. And then lo and behold, somebody comes up. Oh, worst job I ever had. I can't believe you're going to willingly go. All this in every aspect. But mostly when those interchanges are happening, when you start getting on to a real change of consciousness, to drop old patterns and try to resurrect something like a positive outlook on life, rest assured the discouragement committee will send somebody around to make sure. It's almost to make sure that you're sending something to yourself so that you can state again, this is my process, and I will continue doing it. Because I know and feel that it works for me. That is the only issue. And you, let me ask you, can you say deeply in your being that these things have worked for you? That you have been able to just work through the difficulties this way and come out into the light? Then that's all you need. Oftentimes, people marry their opposites. Don't be dismayed by that. So that both can learn to understand the other. It doesn't mean, oops, we're opposites, let's divorce. It means we're opposites, let's understand that. Let's allow each other to be as they are. But most of all, to support whatever process the other is, whatever it might be, however strange it might look to anyone else. So important, my friends. It's so important in any relationship. It's the hardest question that ever comes up for me. The question is a lovely one who has had many, many years of feeling the bliss of expanded awareness. And then sometimes suddenly or sometimes in an ever-decreasing ratio, it seems to be evading her. What I have to say is not going to please you, because what I'm going to say to you is, you're just going to have to hold on. But let me define what that specifically means. In those years when you had those experiences, you were giving off, radiating a certain kind of light and a certain kind of consciousness. I have told you, but people don't like to think about it because of how it sounds, things go forward and sometimes they seem to, it's the off and on phenomenon. Things are on and then they're off and then they're on and then they're off. What has happened here is what happens often, which is that the only analogy I can give is this. If you are about, you have run up to the edge of an abyss, and you look across and you see, let's be very corny, the promised land on the other side. Is that corny enough? There's the promised land on the other side. And you stand there and you're ecstatic, which is the last few years, many years. Ecstatic. Oh, look at the, look. And then all of a sudden you say, I want to get there. And you look around and there's no bridge, there's no pole vault, there's no airplane, there's no hydrofoil. What are you going to do? Here I am stuck on this ravine and I want to get across. And finally you decide what you have to do. You can't fly because you're not a bird. So you have to get up enough steam. So you go back and you start running. And you run, and you run, and you run faster, and you run faster until you have enough momentum behind you that you can get across the abyss. Understand? Otherwise, you stand there like this and look at it. And that's what a lot of people do for a lot of years. They just look and they say, oh, bliss, bliss, this is wonderful. Look at the promised land. It's so beautiful. I think that's wonderful. Isn't it? Someday I'm going to go there. This is what the psyche says. And finally, one day, they say, wait a minute, I'm bored with standing here. I've had the same voltage in me for a long time. I need some more, and I don't know what to do. Do you understand the idea? So in the going, in the back, do you all understand what I'm talking about? I don't know what you call it, but you go way back, and you start, and you begin your stride, and you get stronger and stronger until when you get there, you have the ability to cross it. Now, you have... I wish I had a, I don't know what you would call it, the ability to put you back 10 years. Because if I could, you would realize that in truth, you are feeling the things that you were feeling 20 years ago. It's just that you have a desire for more, for different, for something greater. When you have this, do you understand? When you have it over and over again, it takes on a hum that becomes more normal. And now we're asking for greater velocity. I really do wish I could take you back 10 years. And you would say, take me back to the present. Because you are, it's not a true statement, but I see how your psyche is feeling about it. Because to take the analogy to its end, that entity standing on the rim who decides to go back, he takes everything with him. Every bit of power and energy you ever had goes with you. You can't take it anywhere. And it goes back with you and it's part of your upward velocity. So all I can say is you have to keep asking yourself, as these events, as the choices come up, should I do this or should I do that? What is really helpful and what isn't, which is the question, especially in the world today with so many choices. The only answer is within you is the pendulum of power. And that pendulum moves either into the yes position or to the no position within you. And if you will become addicted to asking that inner pendulum first and always, is this for the maximum, and begin to feel it, and then to trust those feelings, then you will get your uplift a lot faster. Do not let your mind decide what you should do. Do not let your neighbors, do not let your group, do not let anyone, and do not let me. You decide. And you decide by the inner pendulum of power that swings up that says yes, that swings back that says no. No matter what the mind presents to you, you have the choice to make. There's so many things out there. The inner pendulum knows the answer. If that can become your one addiction, always asking before you act, you can't miss. You've gone to a lot of trouble to get here. Many of you have come a long way, and many of you, even though you've come a short way, have had to do a lot to get here. Please, you did not come for this windbag. You came for a meeting of yourself and all of this. This is the power. For the rest of the day, into the evening, into the night, stay open. Start to really feel what this is all about. You may not have a chance like this for a while. Mr. Cope told you that they have decided that these rocks are some of the most ancient on earth. They have a lot to teach you. They have a lot to teach you. All of your cabins are situated close enough. You can hear it. You can be it. Get up in the night and come out. Do what you need to do. But please hear it. This is the silent wisdom. This is the wisdom that passeth all understanding.
It's the kind of power that changes the soul. So please, after you've come so far, don't sleep through it. Don't sleep through it.
I would like to resume with a reality that we began with yesterday so that you can choose to work with it on an ongoing basis if that is what your inner dictates would be maximum and appropriate. Yesterday we dwelt with the concept of the necessity of claiming your wonderful birthright and life right to place in your psyche those seed realities, those seed truths that you will want then to nourish and grow and develop for the rest of this incarnative pattern, or until they reach maximum and you realize it is now time for something else to be placed in there. The responsibility of the seeker is very simple. If you're paying attention to the world as it is manifesting today, you'll realize that you have many, many, many choices of ideas, of ways, of means, of approaches, of exercises, of all number of things. So you can't do them all. And many of them appeal. So what is the way that the seeker really makes maximum use of the time so that you don't spend your time going up this river only to a dead end, turn around and enjoy the view, but necessarily don't get much further along the journey? And the answer is simply that intuitively, if you will take all of these things that come into you seriously in the sense that they do work for someone, then the question is, does this one appear at this moment in my being to be appropriate? Does it have that motion that draws me to it? Now, oftentimes something draws you to it, but you are afraid to leave behind something that drew you to it earlier. Now, please understand, you can't sit in front of the same altar along the road forever. You know, you probably have to get up and get on with it, and that often means giving all gratitude and thanks to the altar that you've been sitting in front of and giving your best to and moving on to something else. Always leaving whatever you have done in the past with tremendous sense of gratitude and never feeling guilty because somehow you have moved to the necessity to get up and walk on. So, the answer is really very simple. As you receive all of this data and some things stimulate you and urge you on, pay attention to those urges as they arise and feel the worthwhileness of it, the wonder of it, and then present yourself to it in the fullness of it. Now, what that means this morning is very simple. Yesterday I asked you to select three basic feeling tones, three basic words, three basic ideas, images, whatever it might be, that you wanted to place with definite precision, with definite power into the psyche so that you could go back and nourish it day after day after day. Now, as we discussed, if you put a beautiful plant in the ground and then pay no more attention to it, the chances are when you return in a few days, weeks, or months, it will be gone. So the same as with anything that you have placed in the psyche. Now, the wonderful optimism of this is, if you have placed something dark and dour in your psyche, if you leave it, no matter how large it is, if you just leave it alone, of its own sweet will, it will eventually just die at the root and move on to its own destiny. The psyche is one spontaneous growth after another. It is constantly changing. You do not come into the world with a full-form psyche and here it is. What you do is you are responsible for placing these things in it and then moment after moment going back and in whatever way is appropriate nourishing. Now today, some of the time, I want to talk about nourishment and what is precisely I mean by that term. The thing that nourishes, the thing that brings your desires into fruition on any level, be it the physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual level, is the amount of attention that you pay to it. So nourishment is attention. Attention has to do in the spiritual work with turning one's consciousness toward it. It is as useful for someone to say, oh dear, I wish I were thinking about God, because in that instance you are thinking about God. You see, it doesn't matter what you are saying, because in that instant you've turned toward it. and it then comes towards you. There is no right way to approach God. You know, there is not this wonderful, vast, wonderful sphere and only one tiny little opening at the bottom, and that you, like an ant, have to crawl around this great edifice till you find the tiny little opening. There are billions upon billions upon billions of openings. In fact, the minute that you look at this amazing sphere of God consciousness, you'll see that it's totally porous and you can fall into it anywhere and in any time and in any way. There is no right way to approach God. It's just approach. If you have to crawl, if you sing, if you dance, if you cry, if you go obscenity, it doesn't matter. You see, this is the whole point of some of those very interesting stories in the Bible, you know. Swear at me if you will, just don't ignore me. Do you understand? None of you want to be ignored. You know, someone loves you, they might swear at you, but they won't ignore you. In the same way with the God approach. So, when you have in yesterday placed, and we will do work again on that, those three deep strands of power and awareness and feeling tone and imaginings all mixed together into the psyche and buried it deeply in the psyche, now then, this day, let us go back and nourish it over and over and over again. To the extent to which, in the next weeks, months, and years, you nourish these very simple things, these very simple things, you will find your life beginning to change. You know, many people come to me and they say, I want to change my life. And I give them an inner instruction and they leave and they're very disappointed. Because what they wanted was some manipulative button that we could both push together that would just explode their outer world, and then when they went back it would look differently, and then therefore they could relate to it differently. Unfortunately, that kind of magic button I have never found. Now, if any of you have, I'd be very happy to learn of it because it sounds like a great deal of fun. But I have been many places in this createdness, and I have never found a button outside oneself. So the only button... The only button that I can share with you and ask you to develop strongly is that inner deep knowing that you are the button. Now, let me talk in depth about that for a moment. Many of you are caught, because of the past, in the belief that there is something outside of yourself, that if you just say the right word, pray the right way, purify in the right manner, crawl in the right position, that somehow God will manifest for you. I would like to tell you, if you are manifesting in this moment, if you are manifesting in this moment, then God is also manifesting. Let me say again, you are it. It is you. You are God manifesting as a separate consciousness, pretending to be someone. Everything you do, God is doing it. Everything you think, God is thinking it. Nothing you do is outside of God. And once you really understand that, freedom is there. You believe, you really believe, that you are acting outside of God. You honestly believe you are acting outside of God. Will you stop a moment and ask yourself what belief this lies on? Acting outside of God? Is there then a God realm and then a non-God realm?